What do these three ideas have in common? A Soviet-controlled moon, a toxic daytime TV show, and a world full of blind people. Well, those are the three concepts that the tech giant Apple is hoping are just enticing enough to get you to sign up to Apple TV Plus. Yes, this week on Download This Show, we are reviewing the latest installment in the streaming wars of 2019. Plus, why does Google want to buy Fitbit and the cesspool of the internet? Well, one of them is back from the dead. Which one? Let's find out. This is your guide to the week in media, technology, and culture. My name is Mark Fennell, and welcome to Download This Show. Yes, indeed, it is a brand new episode of Download This Show, and I am surrounded by editors. I have Ray Johnson, the editor of Junkie. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And I have Tegan Jones, the editor of Gizmodo. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
This is the most efficient intro I've ever done on this show. Why am I talking a mile a minute? I don't know. Slow down, Fennell. Google have announced their planned $2.1 billion acquisition of the fitness tracking company Fitbit. Why?
Well, and it's $3 billion in Australian dollars.
It is.
Which is a ludicrous amount of money when you think about it. But also, Google have never really gone into the fitness tracking smart.
They had watches.
Successfully.
Good point.
We should have let you finish that
there
sentence.
There she is, yes.
Should have let you finish that sentence. Why does that matter to a company like Google?
I think it matters to a company like Google because in this acquisition, they also get the data of 28 million Fitbit users. Really important to point out, though, Fitbit does the whole thing where you can't connect the data to the person. So they have all this information that they will use to, you know, create reports about, say, for example, one that was really interesting I found was when they started tracking periods. There'd never been actual documented data on menstrual cycles of healthy people. In the world. They've only really collected, in the cases, medical cases when there's been problems or, when there's been things not quite going right. So to have an idea of what a healthy, normal menstrual cycle looks like is actually really, really beneficial and really important and really cool. But they can't go, hey, you, this is what your menstrual cycle looks like. I know that now, and I'm going to deliver ads to you via Google, who now owns all your data, about when you should be going buying tampons. But that being said, access to this is still really important. I think it's also worth noting that Fitbit's hardware has been traditionally really good. So, it's a good acquisition.
If Google's business model is largely built on, well, Google writ large, their business model is built on organizing information. Does it potentially put that tradition at risk with Fitbit?
I mean, maybe, but it also gives Fitbit a bit of an economy of scale. Like, they did need a bit more of a money injection at the moment, so it really is a good time. And, to the point where, most of my tech journal friends and I have been literally waiting for Google to buy it, all year. It's not a surprise to us. So I really think that for Fitbit, it's like, well, okay, now we can have Google money, so we can probably go a little bit beyond what we've been doing at the moment, especially when, so many more smartwatches are coming out now that do a lot more than what Fitbit actually does. Like, they're great little devices, but a lot of people are wanting more of a, all-in-one kind of thing, like an Apple Watch or something like that. So, having Google money is really useful. I also think that just because this acquisition has happened doesn't mean that we're going to see, a Google Fitbit like next year. I think it'll be a number of years, and what is more likely to happen is that, a few little baby steps. So we might see Google Assistant appear in, the next Fitbit, for example, or, a couple of other Google features, something like that.
So very much like the way when Facebook acquires a WhatsApp or an Instagram, it's like, let it be its own brand and then occasionally unify.
Well, we saw Google do this with Nest, right? They acquired them a number of years ago, and it really was only then this year they actually started rebranding to Google Nest. But what's interesting about that as well is that the same or very similar statements that we've heard made this week in regards to what Ray was saying, so privacy and how all of their data will still be protected, even under Google, was also said about Nest and, we're not going to join this together, we're not going to do this, not going to do that, and then the Nest Hubs or whatever they're called came out a few years later and kind of negated that a little bit.
But also, I mean, we talk about the idea of Fitbit being protecting your privacy as being an inherently good thing. There is also this sort of like counter argument that's like, well, Google are very good at getting things to talk to each other. And
exactly.
if they can make it super convenient,
why wouldn't you want that, right?
And the rules can change. And Google are the ones making the rules. Mm. You know, just because they said that they won't do something doesn't mean that they can't change their terms of service somewhere down the track.
And, like they did with Nest.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's interesting.
What would you like to see Google do with this, with access to Fitbit's hardware and the sort of data that they collect? What would it be impressive to you guys?
I mean, I really think like what Ray, I'll try it again. Really what Ray was saying in terms of things like period tracking, which, you know, they only started doing, I believe, last year, and now we're seeing in watchOS with Apple really valuing that for people. You know, it's I think until that point, what really impressed me when Fitbit did this last year was that no one really gave a shit in tech before that. Like, hello, women use it as well. And so to have that
app, there had been period tracking apps before though, right?
But not on like these really like big,
not on big scale.
Big scale, okay. Especially when Fitbit is so popular with women, as is the Apple Watch. So it's a good play, right? I also think that what could be really attractive for people is having things like their Google services being able to be connected to their fitness tracker, that maybe they really love Fitbit and they don't want to change to another device, and Fitbit is generally a little bit cheaper. So having these connected devices but at a lower price point, I think could be really attractive as well.
Android-powered smartwatches do exist. Obviously, we know about the Apple Watch on that end of the spectrum. But when it comes to the Android end, how are they doing?
WatchOS did not do very well.
No, they're buggy.
Yeah, really buggy. They're also just years behind compared to, you know, like the Apple Watch and even some of the other fitness watches on the market. So it was pretty well documented that they didn't do very well, and that even when they were released, they were years behind. So it's not even they've just kind of stopped, like literally as they were being released, they just weren't up to date. So I feel like, again, this is probably why Google is doing this, because it's, you know, one of the gadgets they're just not really doing at the moment. So why not take someone who has, like Ray said, 10 years of expertise and data and you know, and put money into it, and without having to sort of start from the ground up again when they know it didn't work the first time around.
It's always still a little bit behind the eight ball, even when they have the backing of these companies that have been doing it for a long time. So I'm interested to see where it goes.
It is fascinating to me that when smartwatches first started to be introduced, they sort of sprayed a collection of value propositions out to the market. It's like, you know, it's connectivity, you can self-time your camera. And it's been really interesting just seeing in like the last maybe 18 months, 2 years, where the primary proposition of anything you wear on your wrist has pretty much just reduced down to health.
Yeah.
Like everything about the way the Apple Watch is sold now really pushes it down to health and active lifestyles. And is that a missed opportunity? Like are there other things that we would like smartwatches to do that maybe we should invest more time in thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the what's interesting about especially the Apple Watch is, and it kind of goes back to your other question as well, like while there are heaps of Android watches out there, and Ray and I have both tried many of them in our jobs, I will always go back to the Apple Watch. It's the only one that I'll consistently wear because it just does it well. And like you said, for those...
It just works.
It just works. And also looks nice. I think what they struggled with for a really long time, especially with the Android ones, was that, you know, you could either have like an okay amount of functionality or it could look really nice. Never both.
Yeah.
It's getting a bit better now, whereas Apple just did it right. And it actually, even though I usually carry an Android phone, the Apple Watch is what got me into having an iPhone with me most of the time again. But to get back to your question, you're right. It is mostly fitness stuff that's on there. But I mean, it's not like it doesn't do other things. Like you can have your messages come up. You can have your calendar come up. I'd say the thing I use it most for, it's been really convenient for me, has been just having payment on there. So having Apple Pay. And of course, Samsung Pay, that works on their version. So that's extremely convenient. So I think that's the next thing that they're really pushing hard on that just regular consumers are using a lot. I don't really want messages coming off my watch, but if you're into that, it's great.
I do regularly leave the house now just without my phone, which I wouldn't have even considered doing even a year ago.
Wait, so your stuff's going straight to your
Absolutely,
watch?
Yeah.
Oh, so it's got a SIM in it then?
It's just,
It's not eSIM. eSIM.
Oh,
sorry,
right.
Not
okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's just,
say.
It's
I got
there.
An old one. I couldn't be bothered upgrading. That's my thing.
And I think that's really good, you know, for me and with the kind of headspace that I like to put myself in with when I'm not working, which is not constantly scrolling through Twitter, not having to keep in touch with whatever is happening at once on Facebook, you know, not just mindlessly scrolling through Instagram. It just allows me to go out.
Why are you neg my favorite pastime?
It's what I do too. But I can just go out. I know that I can buy things. I know that if I get a message that's urgent, it will come to me. I'm getting my step count up as well.
Yeah.
I'm going to smash all my competitions. So I really don't know if I'm missing anything in what I've currently got with the Apple Watch. So I think what Google would need to do with Fitbit is bring all that functionality to the table as well.
You're right. I could see. I mean, Fitbit has its kind of own payment system that, again, it introduced, I think, earlier this year, I believe, maybe last year.
What
but
can
I don't
buy on Fitbit?
This like works the same sort of way. But a similar thing, like, I really don't know how much that's taken off, whereas Google Pay for your more Android users,
that
you're right. I reckon that's exactly what's going to happen. I reckon it's going to be Google Assistant and Google Pay for sure.
Yep. There you go. The predictions have been made here on Download This Show with Tegan Jones from Gizmodo and Ray Johnson from Junkie. Mark Fennell is my name. And you may have noticed over the last 7 days, there's yet another streaming service that has launched in Australia. We're a few days away from Disney Plus launching, but we now have Apple TV Plus. What? I'm going to have one whinge about the number of pluses. There's too many.
Too many pluses.
Max Plus.
But you know what there isn't too many of? Shows.
Yeah.
So interesting thing about Apple TV Plus, God, it's hard to say, is it's really only launched with a handful of shows. You've got the Morning Wars, known as the Morning Show elsewhere, which is the big behind the scenes of a daytime TV show. C, a dystopian future where the world nobody can see. There it is. And For All Mankind, which is sort of an alternate history where the Soviets landed on the moon first. And there's a retelling of Emily Dickinson.
Yeah. Ghost Rider, which I have some things to say about that. I'm sorry, you cannot call something a reboot if you just completely change the story. If that show is not about kids solving mysteries with a ghost, and it's not, it's set in a bookstore now, do not call it Ghost Rider. I loved that show, Mark. I loved it. Don't do it. Call it something else.
All right, you're going to need a moment.
We've really upset Tegan.
Do you need a timeout? Bex and lie down for you?
Yeah, little blankie, please.
I should also say there is this show called Ghost Rider. But is it
from the 90s.
Okay. And I think there's also a Snoopy movie that's apparently delightful. All right, so we're talking about the number of shows on launch you can count on less than two hands.
There's eight shows. There's 8 shows and 1 movie.
$7.99 a month.
This has been the number one criticism, as far as I can tell, about Apple TV Plus, because Disney are going to launch with the most incredible back catalogue of content known to mankind. That obviously Netflix have spent billions of dollars building up their back catalogue. If we ever see HBO Max, which is the one that Warner Media putting together, they will have that history. I'm just going to put it out there. I don't have time to watch more than one show a month. So Apple launching with something like a handful of shows to me isn't a major issue.
Unless you don't like a few of those shows. Like, what, you can't
guarantee
you're
going to
like
them
all.
I don't like a lot of things on Netflix too, but it doesn't mean I don't think Netflix is valuable.
But at least you've got choice though. Like, I mean, to be fair, there are going to be more. Like, haven't they said there'll be at least 50? But like, I don't know, man. Like, it's not ideal. I mean, there's some pluses.
Hey, get out.
You know, in terms of, you know, you can share with up to 5 people. That's great.
Yeah, that's
cool.
It
doesn't have that tiered pricing system, which also Disney Plus won't have. So unlike Netflix and your stands, where you have to pay extra for extra screens and where you have to pay extra for HD 4K.
Yeah.
It's just, you know,
it's 4K and it's like $8.
Yeah. So that's not bad. I just want to see some, there's already so many streaming services and it's already turning almost into like a Foxtel, which I still have to tell my parents aren't worth it, and I can just give them my logins. But we'll get to that. They're from Wollongong.
Please address, dear Foxtel lawyers, please address your complaints to Tegan. I guess some of this, there has been, I noticed a lot of criticism over the weekend that it was a very soft launch. I think some of that probably came from the fact that the...
Well, I think that's arguable in a way because, yeah, it's a soft launch in terms of volume of content, but it hit like 106 countries all at once, simultaneously.
And there are billboards. I mean, if you're in a big city in Australia, there are billboards everywhere.
Exactly. Mm. And I think this is what Apple has got behind it. Like, they've got the infrastructure to be able to support all this. They've got so much money.
They do.
Everything that's on there is original content, and I think that that's worth noting as well. Like, if you line up original content,
except for Ghost Rider,
on
maybe it is original.
But like, if you compare, you know, Netflix's original content on launch and you know, Apple Plus's original content on launch, you're probably looking at about the same amount. I don't know; I haven't actually done the numbers, but you know, without the support of third-party productions, like, I don't think this is too bad. And what they have produced is high quality stuff with some of the biggest names in entertainment.
Although
so they're really banking on that.
Although, interestingly, some of the reviews have been a tad tepid, I've noticed. Yeah. I mean, but completely honest, the only one I've sat down and watched is For All Mankind. Mm. And I will say, like, the first two episodes were a bit sluggish, but by the time I hit the third, and they did launch with three episodes altogether, and then they'll go weekly, which I think is smart. By the time I hit the third, I'm like, this is great. I'm into
it. Shows are like that well. So many shows people are like, you've got to watch this, you're going to love it. And I'm two episodes in and I'm like, what does this person think I am? They're recommending me this show. Like, am I trash? What is happening? And then the next thing you know, you're hooked on Winona Earp.
Usability-wise.
I thought you were going to say Ice Road Truckers or something.
Oh, no, I am definitely trash. My favourite streaming service famously is Hey You.
Hey, they've got a lot of true crime. I'm very into Hey You.
They've got a lot of interior design challenge shows, which I love.
Hey You is the one that is like ostensibly the reality.
Yes. Well,
famously, they have the Kardashians.
Yes.
I'm just bringing people up to speed. You guys carry on.
And they're also only like, you know, $6.99 a month. So you know exactly what you're getting yourself into. And I think that's how Apple are really placing themselves as well. You know what you're going to get. You're going to get Apple-produced original content with people that you've heard of.
Yeah, because we drove a dump truck full of money up to their house.
We sure did.
The amounts of money being quoted for some of these series are actually insane.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's clearly, it's got to stop at some point. I mean, you've got these massive companies with money that are wheeling stuff out. At some point, you sort of have to just, it doesn't seem sustainable though.
And it's worth noting that, you know, they're not releasing this as an app on consoles, or they haven't already, which is where a lot of people that I know will be, you know, accessing Netflix or Stan or any of the competitors.
I must say the situation we have now where there's like a weird constellation of things you need if you did want to watch all of the streaming services.
Yeah.
Like I have to, so I have Foxtel Now or Go or whichever one they're going with right now.
No one knows what it's called.
I think it's Foxtel Go now. Anyway, in order to watch that on my television, I have to stream it from my phone.
Yes, you do.
And it's just like, why?
Because Foxtel are really bad at the user experience.
They really are.
They really are.
They've acquired, to their credit, some good content.
But like, you know.
Yeah, they get one good show a year and we have to buy Foxtel to watch it.
Yeah. And then like, you know, 3 months ago they changed their UI to look pretty much exactly like Netflix and were like acting like it was, you know, they invented sliced bread or something. I'm like, oh guys, you need to talk to some consultants or something, like to stay relevant. That's what makes me worried for them. Like, you know, as more people's parents get away from the whole set-top box experience. Mm. And if they move almost exclusively into streaming eventually, they need to catch up about what people expect for a certain price and what that experience should look like.
Yes, but at the same time, part of me is just like, why was it hard for Foxtel and certain other TV catch-up services that are very buggy. Why is it hard for them when an organisation like Stan sort of like knocked it out of the park from pretty much the word go?
I think it's
a
secondary thing for them. It's an add-on. It was not their primary offering from the beginning.
Yeah.
Whereas all of the other services are like, hey, this is what we are and this is what we've been doing since the get-go.
And to be fair, they've got, you know, a very loyal audience that still likes their original product. Like, you know, I don't want to be completely ageist about it either. You know, there's people that still love, you know, regular Foxtel and regular commercial TV. And so you don't want to discount them. So I suppose they also have to find that balance. Yeah. So I will say they do need to modernize. So to capture a new audience, you know, we can't completely negate the one that's already there.
No, Love It or List It is a great show.
So at the moment I'm pretty sure like next week we will have Disney Plus. Or the week after actually. Netflix is out there, Stan is out there, KO for Live Sport, Amazon Prime.
Hey you!
For all of your interior design needs.
Officially pronounced?
I have no idea.
So we've got this suite and Foxtel Go. We've got this suite of stuff.
Mm.
If you, as like high consumers of content, is Apple Plus worth the money to you right now, or would you like wait until Christmas and see what they've got?
I think it's worth the money to me right now
because there's a free 1 week trial.
Because there's a free 1 week trial, but also you can get it for free for a year at the moment if you bought a new device. So for anyone who's upgraded, you know, to a new iPhone or, you know, they've just dropped a whole lot of new devices. Yeah. If you've picked one up, you get it free for a year.
And that's a smart play for it as well. Get people hooked on it. Eventually, you know, in a year when there's more content on it, they'll probably still want to subscribe or, you know, forget to opt out.
Yes, which I have to do that thing where I have to go through my credit card statements and go, am I seriously still paying for that? And just nix a bunch of stuff.
I keep getting my FitnessPal premium, which is completely unnecessary. Totally unnecessary. The only thing that it, like, I ever really use on it is adjusting what my macros are.
I downloaded a yoga app, and let me tell you, I am bad at yoga, and I did it once in a hotel room in another country because I thought that would be like my overseas thing.
Oh, you lied to yourself.
And I realized that I'm paying a subscription.
No, Yoga with Adrienne on YouTube.
Oh,
free.
Okay.
Do right. her 30-day yoga revolution. Yeah. It starts easy. You'll love yoga.
She is great. She has a dog. Free, and we've done this in hotel rooms. Yep. Both of us have, yes.
Yep. Okay. We need to talk about the white supremacist website. This is Download the Show. It is your guide to the week in me. Really? Did you just yay?
No.
Download this show is what you're listening to. It is your guide to the week in media, technology, and culture. My name is Mark Fennell. The person who's yaying about the white supremacist website is Ray Johnson. It'll have context in a second. Ray Johnson from Junkie and Tegan Jones looking dismayed from
I didn't yay our Ray through her voice twice.
So gratefully, this is a podcast and you can hear the sarcasm in the yay, people.
Yes.
Yeah, you can. But thank you for underlining it. The notorious online forum 8chan that was disabled after mass murderers who posted racist manifestos on it disappeared. Now it seems something that's alarmingly similar to it with a remarkably similar name has Tegan Jones resurfaced. Tell
me. So I think it's like Aitkun now. So Okun, however you...
Aitkun?
Aitkun.
I love we were so confident we had to pronounce Hey You, but when it came to this, we're like, I don't know.
Well, you know... People like, have said Hey You out loud. Has anyone said this out loud yet?
No.
I don't know.
And also, like, let's just point out, you know, one of the things that's similar about it is they've once again taken a Japanese word. A bunch of presumably white dudes have taken a Japanese word to name it again, which is nice. They're back. But there is one particular caveat that's on the front page now, which basically just says that if there's anything any content that's posted on there now that is against American laws specifically, it will be removed, whereas that wasn't on the original site.
And also one of those disclaimers that people put in their Twitter bio that doesn't actually mean anything, which is like, you know, the views and opinions expressed by the people on this forum, this is user-generated and, you know, the administration, you know, it doesn't reflect what we say or think.
Totally, yeah.
The reason I think this is interesting to talk about, because it's a reminder that all things on the internet are an eternal game of whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
Like, it was stunning to me that, and look, in fairness, like even the original founder of 8chan wanted it taken off.
Yes.
Like, because of how bastardized this thing that he had created had become. But it does suggest to me that, like, when we get in these conversations about, you know, what should we pull off the internet, how should we regulate the internet, it's like, nothing ever disappears, does it?
No, and they're bringing them back. Like, they've already brought a bunch of... Do they call them channels? I keep going to call them subreddits. But, you know, so, like, basically some of the forums, channels, however you want to call it, have already been brought back over. And apparently, last I read, there was something like 200 more requests have been put in for channels that existed on the original 8chan to be ported across. And one of them that might have been already was one, I think it was like /POL. Poll where just a lot of people go in there and talk about some really awful things that they want to do and possibly did do. I need to double check that. But, not great. So this idea that all of this sort of content is going to magically not appear on there anymore, I think is highly unlikely.
But also I want to, like, just think for a minute about what kind of scenario would have to play out in order for them to take something down because it's against US law.
Totally.
So if they've got something up there that is borderline or, you know, if it went through a court process, a judge might rule, who's doing that?
Yeah, totally.
Who's saying...
Who's policing it?
Who's saying, excuse me, I would like to put my time and resources into fighting you having this particular post up. You must take this post down or see you in court. And they go, well, point to the law.
So what do you do then? Like, I mean... I'm not necessarily advocating for taking things down specifically, but I guess I'm trying to rationalize what we generally speaking agree is a cesspool.
Yeah.
But like how it's, so I guess the reason I bring it up is because to me it's like it's a lightning rod for this conversation about how do we do communication on the internet and can it be shaped to be more productive, not productive, can it be shaped to be less abusive?
Yeah.
And it can, like, I guess maybe it's an existential question. Like, actually, can it be?
Yeah.
Can you make the internet a less awful place?
Well, sorry, I was going to say what's going to be interesting as well is how different countries treat it. Because if we remember what happened in the wake of the Christchurch shooting and also some legislation that was being played with months after that, Australia has been looking at potentially just blocking some of those sites that host that in the event of what they would call like a terrorist sort of situation where if, let's say, this new 8chan had the video up there or Facebook or anywhere that they could potentially force telcos to block the site. So I'm wondering if they would even just look and go, you know what? Nah.
Yeah.
We're just going to have like a blanket no on this website if it continues in that fashion. Like you said, if people can't police all this stuff going up, because you're right, like there's no resources to be able to efficiently do that.
Exactly.
Will governments just turn around and say, you know what? No.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, you know, whenever we talk about blocking a website, we also know that it takes about 4.5 clicks to get around that.
Exactly. Sure, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't think there's any way to stop these sites from happening. And I don't think there's any way to really shut them down permanently. You know, once something terrible happens on one of them and attention is drawn to it and your service providers are under pressure to not be associated with these sites, they'll pull like they did with 8chan. It'll go down again. It'll resurface somewhere else. And that's because on the internet, people are always going to find their people. And sometimes you're a bad person. And your people are also bad people, and you're going to seek them out to validate your worldviews, to validate your opinions on things. If you're ostracized from society, from normal social media channels that are open to everyone, if you've been kicked off those, you don't feel like that's your place with your people, you're going to find yourself on one of these forums, and that's when it does become dangerous.
And some people relish that as well. Like, they love that.
The sense of victimization.
Yeah. And
it's an identity.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that you're absolutely right. Like, I don't think some definitely victimization, but some would just be absolutely loving it, going, you know, my takes and my views and what I do is like too much for like mainstream society. So we live on the edge here on the internet.
It's like the people that get joy or, you know, a sense of achievement when you've blocked them.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
It's that sort of thing.
Whereas like, I just get confused. Like, what did I do?
Yeah, what did I do? I have no idea.
I've never met or spoken or interacted with this person.
Yep.
What did I do?
Yep.
So people are terrible and the internet will reflect it.
But there's also a lot of good on the internet.
Don't try and give it a happy ending.
There are puppy videos.
This isn't the last 20 minutes of Steven Spielberg's AI. You can't fix this
with
a happy ending.
I wouldn't be here without the internet. I wouldn't know either of you.
This is true.
I wouldn't be speaking with you right now.
And with that desperate attempt to claw back positivity, we shall end the show. Hey, Ray Johnson, thank you for giving a silver lining to the evilness of the internet.
It's what I do. Thanks, Mark.
And Tegan Jones, thanks for coming back on the show.
Go and look up the original Ghostwriter on YouTube and you'll know what I'm talking about. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure, as always. We'll catch you next week. My name, as always, has continued to be Mark Fennell, and I'll catch you on the next episode of Download This Show.